Visit a farm. Log on to escapemaker.com for more ideas on local weekend getaways and day trips to orchards, farms, wineries, breweries, and more. Get out of the city and explore while also supporting your local farmers. Log on to escapemaker.com now to get inspired and make your escape through the net.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Oh man, the sweet, sweet sounds of Obey City. I have missed them. Great to hear that show tune for the very first time in 2017. Happy New Year, everyone. You, of course, have tuned into Heritage Radio Network. We are coming to you, as always, from the back of Roberta's Pizza here in Bushwick, Brooklyn. You're listening to the very first show of 2017. Of the Farm Report, and we have some big news today. Before we get into that, I want to wish everyone a happy, happy new year. I hope your breaks were good. I hope you got a break. And we were able to take a little bit of time thinking about the show over the holiday, preparing some stuff that I'm really excited to share with you as we head into the new year. And the biggest announcement is that we're going to be joined this winter season by a co-host, the one, the only, Chelly Comer. Chelly, welcome to the studio.
Thanks, Erin.
Yay! the Farm Report is one of the very first shows on the Heritage Radio Network. We've been around for quite some time, and I thought it was time to get a little bit more fresh blood in the studio. I want to mix things up this season. And Chelly and I have been friends for a number of years. We actually met when I was up at Flying Pig. She was a participant in Farm Camp. How did you end up at Farm Camp?
I was also working upstate at the time. I was working in the Catskills and working on economic development programs and local food programs. And, it was just such a great model and really cool to see this kind of platform for bringing together people from down here and people in the food industry with the agriculture industry.
One of the things that Chelly and I have been chatting a lot, early November, is feeling a little bit of this kind of like bubble mentality that a lot of our friends have been talking about, that you've been hearing about a lot in the media with regards to the new administration, and kind of really blowing that idea up and taking a step back and thinking a little bit more about the bubbles that we operate in beyond politics, just the way we kind of think about the world. And as you guys know, I'm a small town girl. I grew up in a one stoplight town, which is now a one flashing red light town. It's like downsized. Population, just shy of 3,000 in rural northern Michigan. I was back home this year for the Christmas holiday and was so struck again by just how beautiful it is out there. But also hanging out with friends and family and being out and about in a town, just how different that pace of life is, a way of life is, than how I spend a lot of my time in Brooklyn. Chelly, you kind of come from a somewhat similar, but New York State. What was your hometown like? What did you grow up kind of thinking and doing and talking about?
Yeah, I grew up in central New York in more of like a suburban area, but kind of on the end of the Rust Belt. Like, I grew up near Lake Ontario, and I grew up in a union household, and everybody in my family, I have a huge family. I have like over 40 first cousins and,
we have that in common too.
I don't have as many siblings as you, though. One thing that I was thinking a lot about over the holidays, I think a lot of people were preparing for like how to kind of talk about the just current state of politics in the country, no matter what your perspective is. everybody was kind of thinking about how to talk about, or if to talk about, kind of that question with their family. And something that's interesting to me is, you know, growing up in a like a blue collar family, and like with my family with a background in the labor movement, how you would have always assumed that people in those areas were Democrats. And, you know, now I think that those, you know, it goes back to the jobs question, and some people are, you know, the perspectives are more conservative now. And why is that happening? And what does that look like? And so, yeah. And I think, you know, one thing bringing it back to the city that's really interesting to me is so many of the people I've become close friends with living here, I've just been here for a few years, but so many of the people I'm close with are from the Great Lakes, are from, you know, similar areas. And I think that that's really interesting in the kind of food and agriculture world, and then just in general in your perspective on things.
So like we flee our homeland so we can
brain
come
drain
across the country to hang out with people
like us. I'll have that sometimes that moment where I'll be like, oh, wait a second, are you from like Ohio or something? you're from Wisconsin, aren't you?
There's a vibe. There's definitely a vibe. Well, Shelley had reached out in late November, early December with some questions for HRN, kind of wondering how, as we headed into the new year, we were going to be kind of talking about this middle space, looking at agriculture under a new administration. We, you know, we've been operating under President Obama for the last 8 years, and any kind of transition of this type definitely has, you know, broad sweeping impacts as it relates to kind of food and farming. We touched on a little bit of what the Trump's policies were as a candidate in a segment we did earlier this past year, I guess, in October. So it's definitely something we'll kind of come back to and visit. But some of the topics that we plan on talking about this year, definitely interested in taking a look at the big ones, really thinking about immigration, labor, trade, climate, land. Kind of fascinated to explore a little bit more of tech and tech innovations in food and farming. Everything from, you know, global positioning systems to UPC codes to, Charlie was telling me the other day about milking facial recognition tools. What was that?
Right. So, well, actually, we were talking a little bit about, I was upstate this week and at a farm that uses robotic milkers, and which are amazing. I wish they were called something else because it makes it sound so different than it is. But it, you know, robotic milkers give the cows free choice for when they want to get milked, and they can just come in and, you know, when they're ready, and it's incredible. And so some facilities that are using robotic milkers are also using the same kind of facial recognition software that's used in security and things like that to identify. This is not like widespread. This is something that I've just been seeing and hearing about, and I've only seen presentations on it and not seen it in real life. But because each cow has different markings, it uses the markings to identify the cows as opposed to using a tag or things like that.
Which, you know, obviously when you're working in the dairy industry, when you're looking at each specific cow, you want to understand what's their milk output? Like, what are they eating? What are they drinking? Like, all those kind of consumption and expulsion patterns are important to track because that's the business, right?
Right. And from a commercial dairy standpoint, from a like large scale dairy standpoint, you can be so much more precise, right? And predict if she's going to be sick or have issues or things of that nature. So it goes back to kind of the theme that we're looking at here, where sometimes we think these issues are so complex, and you know, no matter what scale you're at or what your politics are, you want the best for your business and for your animals, and there's a lot of common values and common ground no matter the scale of the business. And I'm not saying that there are definitely things that I think are caveats and compromises for very large scale production that I don't feel comfortable about. For me, it's about flavor and grass utilization and grazing and things like that. But it's just kind of interesting understanding, like, we want to learn through these like series of conversations about what people's perspectives are, what their priorities are, why they're making these choices, helping us understand where they're coming from.
Yeah. So kind of coming back to that kind of bubble, that phrase I keep hearing is like, oh, I don't really know anybody like that. And Charlie and I were really chatting and really thinking a lot about kind of some of our experiences on farms, in food and ag, and the things that we've been privileged to see kind of firsthand, and the people we know, and feeling like there was an opportunity here in the new year to start kind of peeling back some of the layers here. It's almost in food that there's become these kind of archetype characters of like big, bad, evil corporate farmers and small, good, perfect, organic or heirloom or pasture-based farmers. And ultimately, I can't think of like many places in my life where things are as black and white as I would like them to be, frankly. It would be so much easier. So I think one of the things we're going to be doing is exploring some of these big topics in a very specific way. So obviously, we're not going to give you the complete history of food and farming and the labor industry in one 40-minute show. If anyone out there can do that, please call us. We would love to have you on anytime. But really kind of our goal is to start building for you as listeners and as supporters of the Farm Report, a little bit of a skill and knowledge base to start to be a critical consumer of some of the other media that you're seeing, to hear some things firsthand. And obviously we would love to hear from you. What are your questions? What are the things you're wondering about? What are the kind of like phrases or terms or assumptions that make you go, hmm? It's like the things that make you go, hmm, yeah, right. Like that old pop song. So, Charlie, I want to talk a little bit more about you, though, in this kind of on this theme of deeper exploration. Tell us a little bit about, what happened after you left your hometown. You went to college.
Yeah, I went to college to study engineering. And
Smart. Thank you.
I studied environmental engineering, and I got really interested in, like, nutrients.
Okay.
nitrogen and phosphorus.
Yeah. What is environmental engineering? Like, what does that mean?
It can mean different things. It can mean, wastewater treatment plants. It can mean...
You're like, I can't get enough.
I know. I mean, it's important. I mean, the world runs on manure, Aaron. So,
And we're going to learn more about that. Stay tuned, guys. Sorry.
It can mean stormwater management. It can mean all sorts of different things. But for me, I was interested in watershed management. And around that, I had an interest in the impact of agricultural land use. And so I started focusing on that. But I went to college in Philadelphia, and I started working on farms and in urban agriculture, like my sophomore year of college. And so I've been... I started out very small scale. I started working at a CSA farm, an organic farm. And then after that, I worked on the New York City water supply for almost 10 years as an engineer. And then I, in my free time, was working on different farms or just spending a lot of time growing things. And when the opportunity arose, I transitioned out of engineering and into more economic development work. And that's partially because I just found working with the actual business owners really fascinating. And engineering and design and things like that are great, but it's also, there's that additional dynamic where hearing about how people run their businesses and the infrastructure questions of getting products from farm to market are really interesting to me. So that's kind of... The role I've always seen my career as a role that brings together upstate and downstate, I guess, in a New York State context, and then also kind of bringing together the producer and the consumer, and those dynamics are really interesting. And then there's so many things you can pull out of that. I mean, looking at land use and land succession and land, just the treatment of land and the treatment of our resources is really interesting. The business climate thing is also really I love like learning about like, you know, all different scales of businesses and how people make it work. So yeah, that's,
well, maybe we'll hop skip to your current job now. So you're working for Blue Apron and your title there is,
I'm the sustainability manager.
Sustainability manager. So Blue Apron, I mean, if you guys are podcast listeners and you haven't heard of Blue Apron, I mean, I don't even know. But for, you know, for the,
they're really good at skipping the ads.
Yeah. Then you have like some ad skipping technology that I don't want you to use for Heritage Radio Network, but I do want you to tell me about for my own personal use. No, I'm just kidding. I like love actually podcast advertising because I feel like it's some of like the best targeted. It's like when you hear those ads, you're like, this is a thing I might want. So Blue Apron is a home meal kind of delivery service. It's a kit. So every week they send you, ingredients for different recipes that you can choose and you can make at home. And kind of the goal of Blue Apron is to get more people in the kitchen. Is that more or less?
Right. I mean, the stated like mission of the company is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. So there it is.
And I spent a little bit towards the end of last year kind of experimenting with a lot of different of these kind of home delivery boxes. Cause I was so curious. I found myself having, you know, a knee jerk reaction where I'm like, oh, that's bad. That's like bullshit. It's like, you know, people sending like stuff to you in the mail and like it's, you know, just go to the farmer's market, what's so hard about it? And I have to say I was so impressed by the kind of mostly honestly the recipe design. I thought was like, wow, these are like really interesting recipes from a skill building standpoint, from a flavor combination standpoint. I felt like Blue Apron really stood out above some of the other places that I tried with regards to the fact that I'm like, oh, I could see if you were not a person who knew how to cook and were repetitively using this service, like you could eventually like walk away with some like real skills and get to enjoy some like pretty decent meals. Why do they need a manager of sustainability?
Well, we have a lot of goals around our food systems impact and, you know, are doing a lot of work toward delivering on that. And so our whole kind of supply chain team is working on, you know, working directly with farmers on direct sourcing, working on animal welfare standards. I actually just want to also speak to what you were just saying is, you know, we have this amazing culinary team. Our head chef is John Edler, who used to be the chef at Franny's. And for me, I'm the same way. I've been a cook forever. I love to cook. I cook all the time. But like, I constantly find myself thinking like, wow, I can't believe I made this, you know, with the recipes. And I think one other really interesting thing, I heard somebody on the marketing team make this comment about, you know, we're only 3 meals out of the 21 that you eat in a week. And we like to think that we can have an influence on the other 18 meals you eat during the week. So a lot of the content that is part of the company is just about seasonality, about general, you know, things that we don't even ship, about like different fruits and vegetables that aren't even like necessarily part of the box, but, you know, hoping to kind of educate people. And I guess this goes back to like kind of the career kind of trajectory thing that we were talking about before too. And, you know, you and I have talked about this where in like food and agriculture, you kind of, you know, I started out more small scale and more organic and heirloom and things like that. And I know, you know, you've worked in some amazing kitchens and, you know, worked at some amazing retailers and, it's interesting over the course of time how you start gaining appreciation for like broadening the tent and mid-scale food businesses and mid-scale farms.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I had another girlfriend of mine who very briefly worked for Blue Apron, and she's like, it was really funny because I went in and I was like, she was working on some of the sourcing and she's like, I was used to having conversations around where are we going to get a couple of like bushels of parsnips? And they're talking about like truckloads mm-hmm. of parsnips. So when you're thinking about kind of, you know, impact, and for her, she felt like, she's like, oh, I don't know this world. I don't want to get engaged in this world. This is big. It's like scary. You can't do it well at this scale. And, you know, that's how, like, that's what kind of felt right to her. And I think one of the things that's like interesting is, and one of the things I will hope that we'll be able to explore throughout this year is like why big doesn't mean bad? And also, like, how much actually big is so much of our food supply that not talking about it or putting these kind of like assumptions on it really does a disservice to kind of everyone across the board?
Well, and kind of just speaking to that, one thing that I found kind of, I had a different experience, which is I saw some of the crop planning background, and I think I don't work directly on farm sourcing, but I think it's pretty incredible. We will source, you know, a small volume of product from a half a dozen small scale, women owned startup kind of type farms across the country. And help them diversify their enterprises. We need to help small and young farmers not put all their risk in one place, not put all of their income in one outlet, yeah, like the direct markets. And we need to help people. I mean, those markets are starting to get more and more saturated, and people are looking for opportunities. And, I mean, the amount of resources that Blue Apron is dedicated to helping people access wholesale markets is pretty incredible. But then I'll also say that something that's really interesting to me is we also work with these like multi-generational vegetable farms that have, grown a small number, like, you know, half a dozen of crops for traditional outlets like the processing vegetable industry or regional grocery stores, and they're growing different varieties, and they're adding more crop families to their rotation. And so this isn't easy.
It's not easy, and it's not black and white.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing. It's like finding the space where like you want to occupy. And kind of on that note of diversifying opportunities for farmers to have multiple outlets, I think it's exciting. There's a big amount of funding that just happened here in the city. Grow NYC, the nonprofit that runs Green Markets, is going to be building out a pretty extensive food hub and wholesale market in the coming years. And that is another organization that you spent some time with. What was your work through the Green Markets?
So I've worked on the Farm Roots, which is the Farm Business Management Program, which is still going on and doing amazing things, helping people with succession planning and long-term planning. And one thing that's really interesting is that program's like an outgrowth of what started as a largely, and continues to be, they continue to serve this function of working with immigrant farmers and helping immigrant, you know, a lot of, there's a serious number of immigrant farmers in this country that are coming from very, great farms, big farms, diversified farms with professional experiences and professional backgrounds, and coming here and working either construction jobs or restaurant jobs, or if they're working on farms, they're, you know, kind of just working as laborers or things like that. So one of the functions of that program is helping people who want to start farms here who have agricultural experiences in their home country. So I don't know, that kind of goes back to like what we've been talking about too, with some of these big issues like farm labor, which is always an ongoing issue. And I was sharing with you earlier before we came on air this statistic that I just keep thinking about. I heard a speaker from Cornell, who we're going to have on a subsequent show, mention this week that 80% of the agricultural workforce in the country is immigrant labor. And
wow.
And then also shared some statistics about what that means, like as number of people, and that, you know, of course it's kind of an estimate, but it could be between, because of the lack of documentation, could be between 1.6 and 1.8 million people. But, and then like the real clincher is that I think in the same year that the data was collected, only 149,000 H-2A visas were issued, which is the kind of more legal way of having an immigrant worker. So, I mean, the other thing that's crazy to me when I think about that is that's just farm labor. That's not restaurants. That's not, you know, other kind of ancillary business. It's not, I don't believe that's like livestock processing.
Right. right. Yeah. No, I mean, I think I'm going to be excited to like learn more about this issue, because it's definitely not an area where I have much expertise. I'm like, I don't have much expertise, but I have strong opinions. Yeah. So I'll be interested to see kind of like, my assumptions are that there are, there's a large kind of undocumented immigrant workforce that is really the backbone of our food system, and that there is a lot of kind of complex things that will be exploring, I think, on this show. It's hard on some level for me to kind of like wrap my head around like the idea of leaving your country to go and work not legally in another country in a job that is incredibly like challenging, where you have limited access to any of the, like the rights and protections of that country. And then to like think that those people are somehow like devious or weak, or, I mean, it just like, I'm like, I don't know. It just like doesn't really add up for me.
Yeah. And we want to bring on voices that, you know, help us understand, like farmers who can like help us understand what that really looks like for them, and why, you know, what their opinions of it are. And yeah, that's a great point. Like, we're not experts on these things, but we know people that we really respect that are great business people and doing really amazing things at different scales, that can help us understand what it means to them, what the reality like on their farm is. And then also we want to, you know, bring in some people who are experts, academics or different people who work in advocacy or in the industry that can, like, one thing that I'm fascinated by is like, wait, how do you even like find these people, you know? And it's interesting to me that like, what, you know, you think about the vetting and hiring process that we just go through in a normal job, and you hear farmers say, you know, like, oh, I hired native born, I hired American workers, and they only stuck around at most, you know, on average, 1 or 2 years. And, you know, meanwhile, I have this family from Mexico and they've been here for almost 15 years. And, you know, that's just like just general management kind of input, you know, of like, I hired this person and they stayed, and it was, you know, I got good returns on that.
Yeah, it's tough, I think, to because 2 year. I'm like hesitant to extrapolate too much from like individual experiences. And at the same time, it's like the only way I know how to like understand anything. So we're really going to be like striving to kind of strike a balance between how we understand these things, individual to individual, and also in the aggregate, and where there's space in between those. We have been chatting a lot and we need to take a break.
Yes.
So hang tight, guys. We're going to hear a quick word from the people who keep us on air. We'll be right back.
And this is another one from Obey City. We'll be right back.
Log on to escapemaker.com for more ideas on local weekend getaways and day trips to orchards, farms, wineries, breweries, and more. Or come by Escapemaker's Blue Tent in Grow NYC's Green Markets and pick up a guide to local agritourism escapes to the Green Market's own farmers and producers. Have you listened to On the Road with Beer Sessions Radio? Escapemaker has teamed up with Heritage Radio to design a vacation package that provides a first-hand experience of the local flavors from some of New York's best craft beverage producers. Listen in and book your trip at escapemaker.com/heritageradio. No car, no problem. Escape Maker features plenty of ideas for car-free getaways, including discounts via Amtrak. Get out of the city and explore, while also supporting your local farmers. Log on to escapemaker.com now to get inspired and make your escape through the net.
All right. You guys, thanks for not leaving. This is the Farm Report. I am your host, Erin Fairbanks, in studio with my new host... co-host, Chalie Comer.
Hello.
And we are hearing all about her background. We have been waxing kind of poetic. I hope you guys think it's poetic. We're trying. On some of the things that we're going to be exploring with you in the winter 2017 season of the Farm Report. So, Chalie, you were mentioning some kind of interesting statistics with regards to immigrant labor. And I know that you heard them this weekend because you are part of a really interesting program that they host here in New York State called LEAD. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So it's an agricultural leadership program that's managed through Cornell University. And we're in our second year. It's a two-year program. And it's been a great experience for me. It's people from all across the state, and actually a number of people from neighboring states in the Northeast region. And you know, you do a lot of different like personal training and management training, things like that. But which is actually really good, which is great.
It's good, but it's not the sexy part of me.
Yeah, well, it's good, but there's really like the relationships are really great, uh-huh. And getting to kind of understand where. You know, kind of the what we've been talking about here, like really gaining an appreciation of the complexities of these kind of ongoing themes that happen in our industry, and understanding how, you know, there aren't really always easy answers. And so you get an opportunity to interact with people in government, with people in the industry, a lot of different go on different farm visits and do some really great readings. So we were on some farms talking about labor this week and meeting with some of the researchers and advocates around it, farm labor.
And the program is through Cornell, which is New York State's land-grant university.
Yes. And actually, the application period for the program is open right now, and applications are due in March. So
check it out. At LEAD
I think if you just search like, agricultural leadership, LEAD New York, you know, like, and I wasn't prepared. Sorry.
Sorry.
I didn't know we were going to talk.
I can't remember. It's LEED or LEAD?
LEAD.
LEAD. Yeah. Okay, cool.
And I don't know. I think it's really for me, you know, like having this perspective from being in the city. I think it's, you know, actually Sam Filler, who's been involved with this program too, through his work in the beverage industry, is also in the class. And I think it's really great to have, you know, some people with, you know, there are people who grew up on farms and whose family has been in agriculture for generations. And then there are people like me, I didn't grow up on a farm. My family is, my parents aren't farmers, and but you know, I really care about the industry, so it's been cool to have that.
Probably
dynamic.
Like most of our listeners,
yeah.
Yeah. You're like, I didn't grow up farming. I am not a farmer, and yet,
yeah. And I guess that's kind of goes back to what we want to talk about with this show is like, so what is our role in this discussion? What is our, you know? And I think we're at a moment right now, no matter what your perspective is on things, is like you want to do something. You don't like the division that like of kind of access to different opinions. And like I feel super lucky that I've had this career where I know people like all across the spectrum of opinions on like ag issues, and I want to raise up their voices through this venue and like help people understand like, no, this is like, I get it. Like that's an ideal idea, but like, this is my reality. And, you know, and like, I think that some people would probably be surprised that like, you know, there are a couple of women in like Bushwick talking about like, you know, this type of agriculture or things like that. But you know, I think that they need to know that we're thinking about these things down here, and that they're also thinking about consumers and marketing trends and what the marketplace is doing.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, I feel like if I've learned anything, it's like there's lots to learn.
Right. There's always, that's why I love this industry, is that there is like always more. There are like so many layers to the onion.
I guess I'm like now I'm just thinking about onions. I'm like, onions. What are some other like interesting onion parallels?
I know. Or how many like farm, like little farmy sayings, food sayings? there are so many.
One of
them quickly like goes into an SNL sketch. So
yeah, I mean, ideally. I feel like, I guess the other thing I just want to throw out to you guys is, would love to hear more from you this season. If you're looking for ways to engage with the show, you can email me. It's just Erin@heritageradionetwork.org, or you can email Charlie, which is...
I don't have a Heritage email address.
We have to get Charlie a Heritage Radio Network email address. I should have done that before the show. But you can also leave comments by writing a review on iTunes. You can leave comments. You can leave questions there. It's really nice to get those reviews because it helps us know that you're out there and listening, and it also helps other people find the show. It's a great way to kind of engage. I also a big thank you. So many of you reached out to donate with the Radio Network's end of year drive, and I appreciate that so much. It felt really good to see those donations come in. Don't worry, it's not too late. You can donate at any time if you miss the end of year deadline because you're a human who has like lots of stuff going on. Totally get it. They're really like any amount helps. It's awesome, and it was great to see those kind of come through. So that said, we've got a couple of minutes left. Charlie, I want to talk about something totally different, something we haven't covered, something we didn't talk about before the show. But I am a little curious. One of the things I always find interesting about people who work in food and farming is kind of what they're eating lately. And we're here in the Northeast. It is fully cold January, and I'm wondering if what you've been kind of like filling your belly with lately.
Let's see. Well, one thing I've been loving this winter is I got a wild salmon share. And so I've been just eating, you know, kind of defrosting the fillets, and it's a great, like, I don't know. It's something I'd thought about doing for a long time, and so that's been really fun. Like, kind of.
Who did you get the share through?
From Christopher from
The Iliama.
Yeah, Iliama. Yes.
Nice.
Yes, it's such a good deal too. I mean, and actually at work we just all split like pork shares and things like that. So I have a good kind of stocked up pantry. And I'm not sick of winter squash yet. Like I just cooked like another kabocha squash, and I was like, okay, I'm not, so, you know, like I got probably like another month before,
before the winter. Yeah.
What are you eating?
I did some experimenting this weekend, actually. I was away for about 10 days over the end of the year, and I came back to a half a gallon of sour milk. And I grew up, you know, in a very kind of traditional rural Lutheran Midwest upbringing, which means you're not allowed to waste anything ever. And I've always done baking with sour milk, but I was a little overwhelmed by just kind of like this year. I was like, oh, 4 cups. And also I'm like trying, you know, in that like New Year's cleanse way, I'm like not trying to be eating lots of pancakes right now. So I was like, what can I do with this? And I did this kind of interesting baked chicken and quinoa dish. Nice. with sour milk, and it was so delicious. Kind of creating one, like looking at that kind of food waste issue where you create a recipe around a thing that's kind of gone bad, but then if you like really like it, you're like, well, what do I just like wait for the milk to but what's like super interesting, and I guess I would love to hear from you guys, like what are some of your kind of like waste not want not kind of cooking tips for the home kitchen, because I think that's like one of the topics we've covered on the show quite a bit is the kind of issue around food waste in America. You know, there are statistics out there that, you know, upwards of 40% of the food that we produce in this country is lost or wasted somewhere along the production chain from the field to your kind of home.
And most of that is in the household too. I know. I'm actually, the focus of my work at Blue Apron is around food waste. So looking at like how we can really, you know, we already have like done studies that shown that we're reducing food waste in the household level. And we're working to kind of continue to educate people about it and continue to refine our processes and things like that. So, but yeah, that's one of the things that I always assumed it was, you hear so much about food losses in the supermarket. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. or things like that. Or, you know, when you work in agriculture, you think about field losses. But when you look at the statistics, it's a lot in the household.
It's our fault, guys.
Well, in the Save the Food campaign, there's one thing I've been thinking is really exciting is that there's now this new, the Ad Council and NRDC, the Natural Resources Defense Council, have partnered on this new Save the Food campaign, and there are ads all over and the bus stops and things like that in the city. So I've been loving seeing those.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So send us your tips and tricks, and I will at some point this season get it together to write up that recipe and share it on our webpage. That is a goal of mine in the new year, is to kind of be able to create and share a little bit more of the work I'm doing with you guys. On that note, we are out of time. Thank you so much for tuning in, Charlie. I'm so excited to get to share the next kind of 12 episodes of the Farm Report with you.
Me too. Thank you so much.
All right, guys, you've done it. You've made it to the end of another episode. This show, like all 35 of the great programs I do at Heritage Radio Network, is available for free. You know, you can find us on iTunes. You can find us on Stitcher. You can find us via our website, anywhere you get kind of great podcasts. If you don't already sign up for the Heritage Radio Network newsletter, visit the website, sign up for those. We got some brand new shows coming out this season, lots of fun events. The crew's going to be traveling to some different parts of the country, bringing you some great content. So you don't want to miss any of that. And the best way to not miss it is to check out the website. You can also find me. I am on Instagram and Twitter. It's Erin_Fairbanks. You can check out my website, www.erinmariefairbanks.com.
lots That's of my middle name, too.
I have like three sisters with the middle name Marie. I'm like, come on, Ma. Charlie, anything else you want to leave the folks with before we sign off?
No, I guess I'd just build upon to what you were saying before about people giving feedback on what they want to hear. You know, we're planning on, from our perspectives, you know, framing this around some of these big kind of ongoing issues, like you were saying before, around labor, climate change, consumer perspectives, regulation, biotechnology, things like that. So tell us what you want to hear. Tell us if those are on target with what you're interested in, or if you have suggestions for other topics.
And stay tuned next week for Charlie's email address. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.